Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the January 28th edition of Commodity Week. Well, the riots in the Mideast give the CFTC's proposed trade limits for commodities like corn and crude and silver traction, and what will that mean for prices over time? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Bill Lapp from Advanced Economic Solutions in Omaha, Nebraska. Our panelists in studio today include Paul Cooley, ADM Investor Services, Oakland, Illinois, Mike Georgie of Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. We're working our way into February and still at record high prices for commodities. Tell me why again I want to play Vegas with the old crop grains and oil seeds I have left. Paul Cooley.
Well, as we all know, the last week in January and the first couple of weeks in February, I always think of the February break. And a lot of people say, well, that's old history. But since there's no drought in Argentina or South America, I think a person has to be extremely careful for several weeks. There might be a planting rally, but unless we have a planting delay or summer drought, I think a dollar up is going to be hard to come by.
Mike Zuzolo?
Yeah, as far as old crop, I think, Todd, you make the South American weather your marketing plan at this point. If you've held on, you've done a good job. Go ahead, though, at this point, I think, with early bean harvest starting now in Brazil, I would say go ahead and keep on the sales side of the beans. If you wanted to play those Vegas odds, maybe you could play it a little while longer in the corn just because there probably is damage in the Argentine corn production. But and maybe that brings some sourcing away from Argentina, especially with this strike, depending on how long it goes. Maybe that brings our U.S. Gulf basis up in the next 30, 45 days. But I think you got to watch the wheat if you're going to play that.
And Mike Georgie.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you always make sales on the way up. I think there is definitely a lot of what-ifs out there in both the, especially in the corn market. What if we don't get the acres? They're expecting supply and demands, our stocks to lower in the February report. So there's some bullish news out there, but a lot of this stuff is already known.
Mike, you mentioned the port strike in Argentina. How much of an impact does that really have?
Right now, not much. My understanding is there's about 20 ships that have not been able to get loaded. Argentina is still a little bit away from harvesting in terms of beans and corn, but some people were quoted in Buenos Aires at the Grains Exchange saying that this is starting to get a little bit tough. I think it goes back to what happened in Egypt, Todd. There is a cost to high prices, and in Argentina, it goes back to their inflation and the unhappiness by the farmers for the export policy of the Argentine government. Who's to say the Argentine government won't come in a couple weeks if this strike doesn't get resolved and just say, tough luck, we're selling your grain for you, and then you get into another political, geopolitical issue that the grain markets have to handle. And I think that's what the U.S. producer is going to have to weigh here as we get into the springtime, especially if things in the Middle East continue to get worse.
Paul, the price of commodities is high, but it hasn't spiked, I mean, really spiked at this point. what does that tell you about the marketplace? And is it something to be wary of? Is it something to wait for still? I mean, the spikes usually do come, but it doesn't look like it's going to come just yet.
Well, you know, an orderly market is the best market, as you mentioned. And, of course, maybe we haven't had spikes, but we have had some pretty wild trading ranges. And, of course, just the last few days, we've seen some major trading ranges in the gold, crude oil, and the grain market. My general impression is that, you know, it's a compliment that it is as orderly as it is. I think the big factor here is that the commodity funds do have a large position clear across the board.
All right, let's take a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago for the week. Futures, and we'll go through the soybeans and the corn. Futures in the bean pit for this week had a high of $14.26.5. They're low at $13.64.25. Remember, we give you the day and overnight trade high and low for all week, and then a settlement and a change from Friday to Friday. March beans settled at $13.98. They were down 14.25 from last Friday's finish. And the November contract at $13.23 was down 25.25. The corn pit, a high this week at $6.62, the low at $6.39.25. Settlement price down 13.25 at $6.44. December futures at $5.74.75, down 10.75. We'll get to the wheat in a moment. Actually, the wheat was the only place that gained for the week, but the primary commodities for the Midwest, corn and soybeans, were both lower. Was that within your expectations?
Well, I think so. It is, like Paul said, it's kind of a time of the year when we go lower. A lot of the news is already in the market. Now we have to wait to see what happens. You know, the corn, we do need the acres. If inventories go down, stocks go down February 9th because of ethanol usage and a lower Argentina crop, that's still very bullish. But right now, a lot of the news is in the market. And of course, now they're focusing on Egypt and the crude oil market and the dollar. So, no, I'm not surprised we had a down day, but I still think we have reason to bounce back up.
On Thursday, Zwicker told us during the closing market report that there wasn't really any news, just as you mentioned, Mike, in the marketplace. I'm wondering, when there's a lack of news in the marketplace, what happens in a bull market historically?
Well, you know, one of the quick things here is, boy, there is a lot of news out there, Dan. And part of the news is that we had increased chances of rain in the winter wheat growing area. The Russia took a 5% import tariff off on imported feed grains. And, you know, there's all kinds of news like Egypt and a couple of economic problems, ocean freight skyrocketing if it goes through the Suez Canal. And there's a ton of things that are going on out there, and the market does react to these quick news items during the day.
This is where he'd say, go, Saluki, sorry.
Well, the crush report and the export sales seem to really turn the beans as well, Todd. That was the other thing that really I took note of on Thursday. And the wheat, its inability to take out the fall high from last year in lead month futures or in March futures, that was another thing I think technically caught my eye. I think the other thing that maybe didn't get talked about too much was we had, a lot of people talked about this part, we had a record high, 925,000 barrels a day of ethanol produced, but the ethanol stocks at the end of November are 18 million barrels, the highest level since June, 16% above the previous year. That suggests to me that ethanol is stuck with unleaded in terms of where the U.S. economy goes, so goes the ethanol price and whether we continue to crush at the rate we're crushing at right now.
Is the price of wheat, and let me give it, March contract, a high of 863.5, a low at 820.75, a settlement price there up a penny and a quarter at 825.75 in the March, July at 874.75, up 8 cents. Is the price of wheat too high?
Well, we know that the Tunisian situation with high wheat prices and food prices over in the Middle East, that's a good place to call it, Middle East. And, of course, the problems with Egypt, and there's did improve the weather forecast in the winter wheat growing areas, and there's a ton of feed wheat that we're seeing come out of Australia. The trouble is that wheat did see a lot of short covering. The funds came in and bought wheat. From a fundamental point of view, it does indicate to me that the wheat is a little pricey, in my opinion, right here. the only major drought problems that I see in the wheat country, maybe a dot in China. The Red River Valley has a ton of snow on the ground, which might prevent some spring wheat planting. There's quality issues from here to there, but let's face it, when the supply-demand indicates that we do have a pretty good supply of wheat.
Yeah, and so you're suggesting that it's too high by comparison to wheat markets in other parts of the world or around the globe, and Chicago's just too high, and that's because...
Well, I think funds bought a lot of wheat here.
So it's not the default for... It's a default world contract? And
no, I don't know. We have to go that far. We just don't sell as much in the world market with it. Our prices are a little higher.
It's the most political contract. I mean, that's where we remember 1980. I talked about with you Friday afternoon about in 1964 how Lyndon Johnson stopped and canceled wheat shipments to Egypt. What happens next week when, you know, we had a press conference by President Obama's press secretary, and he said, we are putting down the gauntlet to Mubarak, and we're saying if you don't open up the Internet and open up the cell phones and let these people free— we're going to look at not allowing you to take our $1.8 billion a year, essentially. That opens the door that if Mubarak doesn't break and doesn't go our way, then we start using wheat as a political weapon. And that's a question mark, not a statement. But I think that's where wheat took the brunt of the hit on Friday. And I think it will continue to take the brunt of the hit. So not just what Paul said, but also technically and geopolitically, wheat is starting to rack up a more negative tone. I will say, though, in China, I think that the problems in the winter wheat belt in China is quite extensive, and it's something that has to be monitored.
When you talk to the home office for Allendale, what are the discussion points most often?
As far as wheat or...
No, you know what? We could skip off wheat if you're ready to
well,
go.
Well, no. I mean, you know, and I think it's exactly what we've been talking about. I think in corn, it's a fact that we have a lot of ifs out there yet. You know, are we going to get the acres? Is the ending stocks going lower? Is ethanol going to be an issue? I think the big deal that I've seen here is beans. I mean, what worries me in beans is you have... The United States has 6% of the bean supply, and that is the reason beans have gone up to where they've gone. And if China switches to Argentina, Brazil, why do we need? I think the world supply of beans is not as tight as what everybody, you know, is talking about. It's the U.S. that's tight, and so I think beans are something that to worry about as far as going higher.
Yeah, if you watch the cash market for both corn and soybeans, the cash market has been very tight, Paul. And basis has been tightening up, at least in some spaces around Illinois and other parts of the world.
You know, one of the good things about it is we're basically speculators, and I'm not running a soybean processing plant at this particular time. And, of course, we can look at a little bigger deals. And the only thing I can say is from past years, if I was sitting long 10 contracts of soybeans and we have a pretty good crop of South American beans coming on, I'd be looking for the exit trail. And the reason is that if our basis levels get too far out of whack, somebody's going to bring some beans into the southeast part of the U.S., and that's always a worry that we have to worry about. But beans are very volatile. The Chinese do seem to have a tremendous appetite for U.S. beans and South American beans as well.
All right. I'll go back to my first question, and I'd like to poll you all again. But this time we'll do new crop and old crop corn, soybeans. And if you want to do wheat, that'll be fine too. Do you make sales or not?
On old crop corn, yes. And as far as new crop is concerned, yes. But do buy some bull call spreads, like buy six and sell $7 calls.
No, on old crop corn, buy puts. I expect basis to improve with Argentine corn production having gotten hit. Yes, on old crop beans. Hedging, continue to do catch-up hedging to the 50% level on new crop beans. I'm going to re-own with bull call spreads on that until the acreage report. No new sales on corn until I see the trend in wheat next week.
I think old crop corn, you can wait. I think you have a potential to hit 675 yet in the March contract. New crop corn, I think you almost have to look at, you know, hedging enough to cover your input cost. Old crop beans, I think you sell, and new crop beans, you look at taking a downside protection.
And then another poll, how many acres of corn do we need this season?
Well, just quickly, I think that it's everybody is saying, oh, the function of the market is to get 6 to 8 million more acres. But the problem with that is I think this is worldwide acres and not necessarily U.S. acres. I think the informative people are fairly close. They might even be a little high because there are, you know, it's getting an extra couple million acres into the planting mix.
Where do we find the rest of them if we only pick up a couple million?
Well, I think it's the world. You know, it's an incentive to plant in the world, too, Todd.
Well, we did 246, I think, roughly last year, Todd, but we can do 255. We did that in 2000. We did that in 2008. The president of Cargo was at the Davos Forum, and he said specifically, I expect the grain acres to come because the prices are there.
Yeah, I think we're going to need at least 3 million more acres of corn in the U.S. I think the thing is, if we have less than 3 million, weather is going to be a big factor. If we have 3 to 4, 4 plus, weather is not going to play as big a factor in the market this summer.
You're listening to the January 28th edition of Commodity Week. Some of the other numbers, live cattle this week settled the February contract at 107.50. They were down 45 cents from the previous week. The feeders at 126, 22 and a half were up 67 and a half cents. The lean hogs finished the February contract, $85.75 100 pounds, up $5.42 and a half cents. Back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Bill Lapp.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. One thing you can say about this winter so far is that it has not only been persistent, but it has been consistent as well. Temperatures this week were 4 to 6 degrees below normal across the state. We have not been unusually cold, but on most days temperatures have been well below normal. That's due to a combination of northwest winds aloft, several inches of snow on the ground, and generally cloudy skies. The clouds have helped keep overnight temperatures a little higher than normal, but also result in the lack of sun during the day. Precipitation this week was generally limited to some snow on Thursday across northern and parts of central Illinois. Otherwise, mostly flurries were observed. It does sound like a broken record, but not much is going to change next week. It's going to stay cold all of next week with a reinforcing surge of cold air behind a storm system about midweek. Low pressure moving through the Gulf states will possibly produce some snow as far north as central and northern Illinois late Tuesday into Wednesday. Following the departure of this system, northerly winds will keep the cold air flowing southward through Illinois the remainder of the week. Since December 1st, the beginning of meteorological winter, temperatures across Illinois are running from 4 to 6 degrees below normal. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the January 28th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Mike Zuzalo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Lafayette, Indiana, Paul Cooley, ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, and Mike Georgie from Allendale in Mahomet, Illinois. Our guest on the phone line, Bill Lapp of Advanced Economic Solutions out of Omaha, Nebraska. It's an independent consulting firm specializing in assisting food companies with risk management and other economic and commodity issues. Bill, thank you so very much for being with us. Since this is your first time on the show, can you give us a quick bio of yourself?
Sure. I originally hail from the northwest corner of the state of Illinois, Freeport area, and grew up in a dairy farm there, and ended up after college going to Quaker Oats in Chicago for a while, and I've been here in Omaha for 25 years. I've had my consulting firm was developed in 2005, and we are moving up almost on 6 years now. So we're having a lot of fun trying to predict these markets and trying to guide our clients and provide them some insights. Our clients tend to be more on the user side, not all, and some financial clients, some people involved in biofuels, and a few livestock guys, but a lot of work with the restaurant industry and food manufacturers. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. What can you tell us about the movement and distribution of commodities and food and goods around the planet? Much?
Well, I'll tell you one striking feature of it right now is that we're on the cusp of having a repeat in some ways of 2007 and 2008. There's a lot of things that are different, but there's some political unrest. Egypt's hasn't been precipitated by food riots, but there's been some other areas that Algeria and the Mozambique are the two examples that come to mind, where you start to see the impact of higher food prices having an impact on the political landscape there and the social unrest. And one of the first things that happens when that occurs is that the leaders of these countries restrict their own exports if they are exports. Like Syria might be a small exporter of wheat. Well, that will be cut off. India is an exporter of wheat traditionally. That would be cut off if that country deems one way to procure adequate supplies and to prevent hoarding within the country is to limit exports or put a ban on exports. So the first leg of this is that some catalyst moves the prices higher, as it did in 2007 and as has done in the last 6 months. And the second leg, you get an amplification of that by having some of these countries restrict their availability of grain to the world.
Bill, in your opinion, is the end user pretty well covered in the futures or in the cash market?
I think it varies a great deal in terms of by company. And food end users tend to have a little more, I think, right now than a lot of the livestock producers. The livestock producers, for the most part, have had a limited opportunity to take advantage of some of the forward coverage. So you might see cattle feeders or broiler producers or hog producers having limited coverage. And when we were sitting at the end of June below $4, there's a lot of sage advice being given to them that we were heading significantly lower, and the crop was going to be record large, and the crop was impervious to any weather problems. And we all know what's happened over that period, and it's been difficult for them to step up to the plate and be willing to buy corn knowing that they're locking in a negative margin.
Bill, food inflation-wise, the Fed said this week, no, we don't have any real general inflation. Yeah, there's some higher commodity costs, but their beige book a week or so ago said a bunch of our districts have a much higher price. They have shortages in some raw materials, yet we can't pass it on because the consumer can't take it yet. Do you see that switching? Is the Fed kind of behind behind the mindset of what's going to happen in 2011 from the clients you're talking to? Will they pass on and be forced to pass on higher food costs?
I think it varies a little bit. I'm in the Kansas City district, and Honig is the president there, and he has been a outspoken critic of the low interest rates and the risk from inflation that it brings. So some of those comments come specifically from his district. There has been a increase in wholesale costs. The commodity side and the producer price index have increased dramatically over the past year, with more to come. And a large part of that has been proteins and increases in the price of proteins and dairy products. For the most part, these haven't been passed on to consumers, and that's what I think lies ahead. You either have to have a decline in those wholesale costs, which I don't anticipate a significant one in the short run, or you have to have these costs passed on to consumers. And there's a number of reasons. I'll just give a quick example. The typical food manufacturer out there has to decide whether they want to increase prices and risk losing market share for several years, or to stand pat and maintain a market share. So it's a calculated decision that they have to be very careful and make a measured response. I think eventually, though, in 2011, is that eventually you're going to see higher rates of food inflation at the consumer level.
Bill, are you, you know, in 2007 and 8, we had $140 a barrel crude. We had a very wet spring, and everybody thought the corn wouldn't get planted, and eventually it was. Are you advising your customers, your end users, to take coverage on their costs because of the fact that we could go back to $8 or $16?
Yes, in general, yes, and the thought process in my mind is that we have still have a very volatile market environment ahead of us, and we saw a major poultry company go out of business in 2008 because of the wrong response, an inappropriate response to the challenges of risk management. So I think being proactive, taking advantage for our end users of the breaks in the market, much as you would say any unexpected increase would be an advantage to increase and pick up farmer sales, are the kind of environment you want to take advantage of. If it's going to be a volatile environment, and it's going to be in part led due to outside factors, you want to take advantage of those, I think, whether you're on the buying side or the selling side.
Bill, the Feed Grains Council talked about 7 million tons of corn going to China. Do you buy that? And when, if so, when do you think that'll start?
Well, that would be nice if I knew that. There's been pretty limited sales to them of corn in a much bigger. It's been a much bigger market for ethanol byproducts for the DDGs. So, maybe that's a little bit of a quietly they're picking up their purchases through that market. That looms as a risk at any point in the future. What their stocks in reserve are, nobody knows. So I guess both from a bearish risk for a producer trying to make sales or a bullish risk for an end user, what China does, whether it's on importation of corn or making a sudden end to imports of one product, loom is huge risk that's going to make this market extremely volatile and, I guess, very fun for some.
Bill, we appreciate you taking the time with us today, and we do thank you for being on Commodity Week.
It was a pleasure. Glad to do it. Hope I can do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Bill Lapp is with Advanced Economic Solutions out of Omaha, Nebraska. Now time for a final word from our panelists in studio. Paul Cooley, we'll start with you.
I'm going to start a new policy, replace or buy 5 or 10 contracts at harvest time to have a little extra corn under my belt.
Mike Zuzulo?
Well, I talked to a trader friend on Friday afternoon, and I said, have the $7 new crop corn bowls and the $15 new crop bean bowls backed off after what happened on Friday with Egypt? And he said, no, not yet. And I'm going to ask that question for the next 3 Fridays.
And Mike Georgie?
Well, I think they're right. It's going to be an exciting market, but it might be time to lower your risk and manage some of your risk opportunities.
Again, our thanks to our panelists in studio, including Mike Georgie of Allendale out of Mahomet, Illinois, Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a good week.